The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley. You know, I only gave a one-word answer to the caller about 40 minutes ago that asked about, because we did that survey on the media and reporters and everything else, about how many people would want the president to be able to shut down the media. And we were just using it as an example that, you know, that polls are not accurate unless they really, to me, deal with reality. And that's why polls early on that if the election were held today mean nothing, because they're not being held today.
Right.
And as you see, as we mentioned before, when the polls get closer, you know, to the actual election, you notice that they're the ones that after the election is over are much more accurate. Why? Because people are then in the reality of that moment. But when he called up and said, well, what do you guys think about reporters being licensed? Who does the licensing?
Right. And what qualifier would there be?
What are the qualifiers? No.
And then I guess the implication, too, would beyond that, there would be some level of punishment that would include revoking the license.
Yes.
Well, no. Okay. So then you ask yourself, what is a reporter? Then you ask yourself, okay, what is a news source? Because a number of people have, you know, put up some, I think, some very credible news sources online. Daily Caller is one of them. Daily Wire. You could put up a number of websites, assuming none of those people in those positions had any experience, should they still be able to put up a website and report things? Of course. Assuming they only do it to put up bogus information and they're not accurate. Fake news. They should still be allowed to do that. You and I can determine whether or not we believe credible.
I don't want government involved in the media.
Exactly.
And end of story. Now, you may say that's because you're part of the media. I believe I would still hold the same opinion. Right. I would rather have the media that we have today, which is thousands of news sources. But it's just too much. It's not. Well, no, you can filter through it. If you wish to find out the information, you can do it. People do it each and every day. I would rather have the hundreds, thousands of different websites out there that exist and podcasts and Facebook and Twitter. Yeah, but you get false information. Yeah, and you get correct information. Yeah, you basically are dealing with the human element. You deal with humans that wish to portray the truth and not. I believe that most people are intelligent enough to find their way through the maze. I believe I can do it, and I don't believe I'm a genius. I'm just an idiot overnight. And the other idiot overnight over there, he can do the same thing, too.
I can try.
I believe he does it successfully, too. If we can do it, it's that simple. If the two idiots overnight can do it, so can you. So can anybody. So I would rather have what we have today. Even with all, call it from both sides using it, fake news. With all the fake news that everybody claims the other side is always doing, I would still rather have the system that we have today than what I grew up with, which was three television networks and their nightly news and a couple of major newspapers in most towns. And in a lot of towns, one major newspaper.
Yeah.
I would rather have on a national scale, I would rather have the thousands that we have now that are unregulated by the government than to have just four or five different sources when I was growing up.
Yeah. Exactly. And then they become, you know, Walter Cronkite, America's most trusted anchor, you know, and
he admitted it later on.
That he was biased.
Right.
And of course he did after his career had pretty much ended. But that's something that if we have a number, this is how it's done today. It's almost like we build our own internal algorithm in our mind. When you're looking at a story and you say, well, wait a minute, is this true? And you and I will often, even on the air, comment, well, wait a minute, there's only one source reporting this or reporting that. And so we'll include the possibility that it's not accurate, or we'll wait to see if there's more evidence of this particular thing happening. I remember when, in fact, Brett Baer, I trust Brett Baer and his approach to journalism, but the night that he came on and said his sources telling him that an indictment could be coming down soon for Hillary Clinton a couple of years ago, and we said, if you get burned, if your sources are wrong,
you better be right.
You are going to be burned.
And he was burned.
And he was burned. So you kind of have to, that's how you have to approach it, even if it's a news site or a journalist that you trust. You have to look at the story and the nature of it. And when we build that internal algorithm, that's what we're doing. We're saying to ourselves, wait a minute, something doesn't add up here. I was telling you during the break.
You were.
The story out of New Mexico and these 11 kids being held and being trained, according to the prosecutors here, to do school shootings and everything else by a man they say is a radical Muslim. There are a number of things here that we don't know yet, and there are some holes in this story. And I'm just wondering, and I think it's because we're learning, or I guess even the media is learning so much about this case right now that they don't know, they haven't learned everything. And we go to a number of sources, again, to find out the details on this. But there's something odd about that. I don't know what it is. I don't know why it feels odd to me, but there's something missing, a great deal missing about this story. And I'm not sure what that is. We'll learn more, I'm sure, in the coming days and weeks. But that's kind of how most critical thinkers, I think, approach it. In today's world, you can't trust any given source, regardless of how you feel about that source on any given story. You know, you should always have a question mark after reading a story, and that's where you start doing more homework and looking for more sources. And when you know more and more, when you see more and more of those websites or channels or whatever it is reporting the same thing, that's when it starts to come together and it becomes more credible.
Hundreds of pages of previously unreported emails and memos provide the clearest evidence yet that the research firm hired by Hillary Clinton's campaign and the DNC to find dirt and defeat Donald Trump worked often and early with the FBI, a Department of Justice official, and the intelligence community during the 2016 presidential election and in the early days of Trump's presidency. Fusion GPS's work and its involvement with several FBI officials have been well reported. This is John Solomon from The Hill, who's been covering this. He goes, but a close review of these documents show just how closely Associate Deputy Attorney General Bruce Orr, who worked and reported to Obama Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates, how they maintained contact with Fusion, and in particular, its primary source, former British spy Christopher Steele, before, during, and even after the election. Orr's own notes, emails, and text messages show that he communicated extensively with Steele and Fusion GPS founder Glenn Simpson. Those documents have been turned over in recent weeks to investigative bodies in Congress and the Department of Justice, but not reviewed outside the investigative ranks until now. They show that Orr had contact with Christopher Steele in the days just before the FBI opened its Trump investigation Hang on now. Just before Trump, or the FBI opened its Trump-Russia probe in the summer of 2016, and then engaged Steele as a confidential human source assisting in that probe. They also confirmed that Orr later became a critical conduit of continuing information from Steele. Get this now. After the FBI ended Christopher Steele's role as an informant. Now, remember, he was an informant because he was the conduit to the Russians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They talk about Steele texting Orr on January 31st, 2017, referencing Trump's firing of Sally Yates for insubordination. Steele's FBI relationship had been terminated about 3 months earlier. The Bureau concluded on November 1st, 2016, that he leaked information to the news media and was not suitable for use as a confidential source. The FBI specifically instructed Steele that he could no longer operate to obtain any intelligence whatsoever on behalf of the FBI, those memos showed. Yet, Steele asked Orr in the January 31st text message if he could continue to help feed information to the FBI, which was coming from where? The Russians. Just want to check you are okay, still in the situation and able to help locally as discussed, along with your bureau colleagues, end of quote. Or texted back, I'm still here and able to help as discussed. I'll let you know if that changes. Steele replied, if you end up out, though, I really need another bureau contact and a point number who is briefed. We can't allow our guy to be forced to go back home. It would be disastrous. Investigators are trying to determine who Steele was referring to there. FBI officials now admit they continued to receive information from Steele through Orr, identifying more than a half dozen times its agents interviewed Orr in late 2016 and in 2017 to learn what Steele was saying. And Steele was getting his information from where?
Russians.
They continued reliance on Steele after his termination is certain. That they continued reliance on Steele after his termination is certain to raise interest in Congress about whether the FBI broke its own rules. But the memos also raise questions about Orr's and the Justice Department's roles in the origins of building a counterintelligence case against the Republican presidential nominee based heavily on opposition research funded by his rival's campaign, the DNC, and the DNC's main law firm, Perkins Coie. Some of the more tantalizing Orr contacts occurred in the days when Steele made his first contacts with the FBI in the summer of 2016 about the Russian matter. There is something separate I want to discuss with you informally and separately. It concerns our favorite business tycoon, Steele wrote Orr on July 1st, 2016, in an appearance reference to Trump. That overture came just 4 days before Steele walked in to an FBI office in Rome with still unproven allegations that Trump had an improper relationship with Russia, including possible efforts to hijack the presidential election. Orr scheduled a call with Steele over Skype a few days later, but then the two men met in Washington on July 30th, 2016. Orr brought his wife, Nellie, who was working at Fusion GPS, on the Trump-Russia research project. Wow. Great to see you and Nellie this morning, Bruce. Steele wrote shortly after their breakfast meeting. Let's keep in touch on these substantive issues. Glenn is happy to speak to you on this if it would help. So as we can see, we now know clearly Steele had a direct line to the FBI, to the Department of Justice, not only during the investigation, before the investigation, during the investigation, and after he was terminated by the FBI.
Right.
And their own rules said he was not to be a source of information. He continued to be a source of information to Bruce Orr after the election was over, far after the election was over. And well into 2017. Wow.
Incredible. I mean, you look at some of these exchanges, some of these messages back and forth, and they date well into the fall of 2017. Wow. That's pretty incredible. And pretty damning evidence. Again, if we were to just build the list of things that are known and documented at this point, if that doesn't point in one direction, I don't know what does.
See, here's one of the things. Steele offered Orr many other theories over their context, including the now widely discredited one that the Russian Alpha Bank had a computer server as a link to the Trump campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Completely discredited, completely false.
Right.
So how was this all sold? Like I said, it's drip, 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 but we learn a heck of a lot more, don't we?
Well,
over the last year.
It seems every once in a while, just like with this latest stuff with Orr and his wife and the connection there, that every once in a while that drip turns into a pretty good flow of huge amounts of information. And this is key information.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tires are one of the largest operating costs for owner-operators and fleets alike, but retreading gives you the opportunity to reuse your existing or old tires and save money. You can save anywhere from 30% to 50% per tire by retreading, provided that your casings are properly maintained. Maintaining proper inflation levels is one of the most important things you can do in order to preserve the durability of your tire casing. Underinflation causes a tire to flex as it rolls down the highway, resulting in internal heat buildup. In order to keep your tires properly inflated, add a tire pressure check to your pre-trip inspection. Ensuring that your tires are properly inflated will help maintain their integrity and will allow you to use them for multiple retreads, saving you money. Visit a TA truck service location near you to ensure that your tires are properly inflated and maintained.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. Let us head to, oh no, hang on. We'll get your calls and comments coming up here. Following the bottom of the hour, Erica was talking too long last time.
Sometimes I just go on and on.
I was being completely and totally silent.
And on and on.
And so...
and on.
No, the Bruce Orr stuff really shows you, because here's the whole point, that the FBI said, okay, we're not going to use this guy anymore. Let's use a back channel. We use the Department of Justice as a back channel. Why did they do that?
Right. Why was that the case?
They weren't following their own rules and regulations that they set for themselves.
Yeah.
So here's my question. Who in the FBI said it's okay not to follow our own rules? Who gave that order?
Well, it had to have been approved because...
Who gave that order for the FBI that even though the rules were not going to use Christopher Steele?
Right.
Who said it was okay to use Christopher Steele then? Excuse me. Who said it was okay to still communicate with Christopher Steele after the FBI said, no, we can't do it anymore?
Right.
We cannot use intelligence from him. That's a quote.
Mm-hmm.
So then who gave the order? Strzok? McCabe? Mr. Integrity?
Right.
That would be James Comey.
Yes. Somebody had to have known.
Who gave the order and said, I'll put it this way, who authorized
the
fact?
Who okayed it?
Who okayed it?
Yeah.
Would be my
question. May have been somebody else's idea, but it had to go all the way to the top in terms of the approval of it.
Right. We'll be right back.
scare people. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome, good morning. Let's go to Andre in Seattle. Andre, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hey, morning, Gary and Eric. How you guys doing?
Fantastic.
Excellent. I was calling in because I was telling the switchboard that I've been recently red-pilled, you know, and I decided after this election, you know, being fooled with a lot of the things that the Democratic Party did during that time period before the whole Russia thing blew up, I was really upset at the fact that there was collusion, but they say Russia, but it was the DNC. And the way that you guys did that with Bernie Sanders and the fact that Debbie Wasserman Schultz had to step down is an indictment. And the fact that nobody talks about it on the news and nobody talks it on the left at all, to me is mind-boggling. And that's when I said I can't do this anymore, because now I'm looking at my face in the mirror and I'm lying to myself, and you guys are being cheated. And they cheated you, and now this ridiculous this aggression will not stand. And I become more of a critical thinker because of it. And it's amazing, like, what you can, when you turn off the idiot box, and everybody went and saw Incredibles 2, and what was, you know, the antagonist in the film was the screen slaver, and the minute they look at the screen, they get high on that, and then they lose their minds.
Right, yeah.
You know, and they put it in your face, Hollywood does, and they're telling their own story, and it's embarrassing.
Well, and that's the thing, is that to portray it as the truth, it's often done, it's far too often done right now in the media. And the thing is not to assign credibility or I guess to say that you necessarily have to jump from one ship to the other. It's you're jumping from one ship to your own ship. You're the captain now,
right.
To quote another movie. And the idea would be, almost a direct quote, the idea would be, if you're a critical thinker, because, you know, there's plenty going on the right that Gary and I have talked about. We're conservatives, but certainly we can call people out and say when they're being disingenuous and everything else,
lying
to themselves.
Yeah, I don't like the political idolatry I see on either side, and we've called out both sides for it.
Exactly.
I want critical thinkers out there. I don't give idol status to anybody who is a president or anybody who's a civil servant,
right.
And I find it childish for people who do.
Yeah.
I find it childish, right. And not being an adult when you look at any politician and you actually believe they're going to save us.
Yeah.
Well, they're not going to save us. They may make things better, a little better, and move it in the right direction, which I like. But there are no saviors out there.
Right.
And everybody has faults. Every human being has faults, and every president has faults. And we should acknowledge when they do good and when they agree with us, and we should acknowledge when we disagree with them and we believe that they're doing wrong, irrespective of our political party.
Absolutely.
And we've always thought that. I will say that, you know, with the Democrats, and you make a great point that, interesting coming from your perspective, how huge that was for you with the whole DNC and what you saw happening there,
yeah.
And the fact that they were trying to marginalize in essence, and support Hillary and not Bernie Sanders. And it would be interesting, because you seem to be somebody who has a pretty idealistic person. It's okay to be idealistic, by the way, but you're pretty idealistic.
Absolutely.
and
I never sleep.
And you're looking for we're never going to obtain purity, but you'd like to see purity in the system. That's your goal. And when you don't see it, you get very upset about it. And what you're bringing to us tonight is something that I really haven't heard a lot, and that's Democrats screaming. You did see it a little bit when it happened, but Democrats not screaming about what happened to Bernie Sanders. Go ahead.
But, like, you know, I'm 34 years old. You know, I don't consider myself a millennial. I just don't. You know, I remember the world. I remember the first Iraq War, sitting down and watching that with my dad and my parents. You know, and I guess I'm a diamond in the rough. You know, I'm a gay black man who came from a household that was married, and it makes a big difference, and you can definitely see it. And the thing is, I've been totally submerged in, like, the leftist thinking my entire life. And so then when I got red pilled, it's like, wait a minute, there's so much duplicity on that side. And then when I realized that something happened when I changed from being pro-choice and I went pro-life, and my family was like, I don't understand. And I said, well, you know, I'm sorry, but their argument is that it's not, there is no life until it's born. But if she gets killed in a drunk driving accident, now they're screaming there's two lives. Wait a minute. What's this duplicity? Mm. Either it is or it isn't, but you guys want it both. And that's the way that they've been playing. And it's like, wait a minute. This is not, wait, my parents taught me differently, and I kind of been going psycho.
No, I can see that. I can see the conundrum. Yeah.
No, I'm laughing because I think everybody goes through that. I'm laughing. I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing because everybody. I think most people,
buddy, I'm laughing with you.
Right. You go through that process. You go through that process, right. I realize.
The
I think most people do.
Like recovery or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, is what I feel like.
Well, and
it's a point where you accept it.
Yeah, it is a discovery, maybe not so much a recovery, but you're right. You kind of look back at it and go, wow, I was fully, because in a recovery process, it would be, man, I was totally fooled and drawn in, and I was controlled by, you know, whatever
Another
that would be.
Reference for you. It's like Lost Boys. You know, you thought you had the power, Michael. Yeah. Oh, you think you're eating rice, and he looks down, and it's a bowl of maggots.
Yeah.
Yeah, but just understand this. At 34 years old, don't spend much time on guilt that, oh, boy, why didn't I see this before? Just worry about what you can do today and tomorrow.
I've completely moved on, and I've done my research, and... You know, the other thing you hear is, like, he's racist, he doesn't like black people, and I hear it a lot in the community, and I'm like, I don't get it, because that's not what I've read, and you haven't read anything. But if he's so racist, then why did the Rainbow Push Coalition give him an award for giving money and everything to the black community and businesses? If he's so racist, then when you look up his executive order that he just signed, like, right when he got into office, during Black History Month, kids... I'm going to make an executive wing that is here. I'll be in there, too. I'm going to get all my friends and all the historical black colleges in this country in every 20 states. We're going to try to figure out how to get you guys money. If he is such a racist guy, why is he uplifting 400,000 black students to be smarter tomorrow and be business? I'm sorry, it does not compute.
Yeah, Andre, damn good questions, by the way, that you're asking there. And it is, again, that's the approach of any critical thinker, because we're free to believe and live our life, and that's the great thing about America. But when so many are drawn in, it becomes such a great disappointment, I think, for people who, a lot of us libertarian conservatives, who say, you know, you're really not free if you're going down and you're living by the narrative that they have created. I go back to the movie The Matrix, you know, and that's it. You know, that's with Joey Pants, you know, he's sitting there and going, you know, he's sold out. And I know it's not steak, but it tastes like steak, and that's all that matters, right?
Andrea, let me ask you this question, because you come from a unique perspective, somebody who, you know, was more left, more Democrat and everything else. When you hear, because one of the points you're trying to make is, I don't see Trump as being a racist. I don't see Trump as being this. Why do you think then, why do you think that so many Democrats and those on the left are using the rhetoric that he's a, forget about being racist, that he's a fascist, that he's a Nazi? Do you, now I look at that and say, when somebody doesn't have the substance of an argument, that's what they use. They name call, because if they had, if they knew that.
And, you know, then they'll move the goalpost and, you know, no Scotsman puts sugar. I get it. And they do that all day. But when you hit them, you know, again, and the more I research, like with facts, they immediately run because it takes away from their narrative. And then on top of it, we're dealing with people's egos here. And it's just a battle of egos, and egos are so easy to bruise, you know, and to be told that you're wrong or that maybe you need to rethink it because no longer it's not progressive, it's regressive. You guys are calling for safe spaces, and the DNC, when they, after Debbie Wasserman Schultz stepped down and they were having the running and stuff, I forget, her name ended with Brown or something, but she's, you know, a white lady on television telling her whole base, if you're white, shut up. You can't speak. Yeah. It's time that we shut up. And are you kidding me? No. You just undercut. You told a whole class of people because of their race in America to shut up. I'm sorry. You have no concept of what America is. And when you throw at them what America is, make it great again, they say it's racist. They don't even realize, like, we lost 5 million jobs, you guys, since 2000, and 66,000 manufacturing jobs. That's amazing. This is a battle of nationalism and globalization, and if you say that it's racist, then you've been hypnotized by that silly antagonist in Incredibles 2, the screen slaver. You guys are seeing everything.
Yeah.
And this is why I watch all the mainstream media, because it's like, I know I saw that clip. You're not going to get this over on me, and I can basically read it verbatim. Keep talking. I can do it too. But you're not thinking. You're just repeating and regurgitating. And I was watching this one thing, because in Washington, Evergreen College,
yes, like, yes.
When you follow that, it is so unheard of.
Yeah, we covered that whole
like,
thing.
That really happened.
Right.
Like, that really happened.
Yeah.
Well, you know something, Andrea? I've always thought when you're a critical thinker, when you're actually a critical thinker, ego doesn't come into it. Because when you're a critical thinker, you're trying to find out how things actually work. How do things actually work?
Right.
And ego really doesn't come into it.
The truth is the only thing that matters.
Right. The truth and facts are what matter. But, Andre, look, we got to go. But thanks.
Thank you, Andre.
Thank you so much.
We appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you so much and everything
thank
else
you,
for your insight.
Yeah. Great stuff. You know, and here's, you know, we kind of, there's over the years of doing this, there are a number of calls that we might get, right, where people will make a claim to say, you know, I've kind of, you know, turned over a new leaf or now I think differently. But Andre pointed out some very clear things that demonstrated, you know, that, look, we know that people are critical thinkers, whether they involve their critical thinking, whether they use their critical thinking skills is the difference. And it's clear that Andre's using his.
Yeah, we've often said that we believe that everybody has the potential to be a critical thinker, that they choose not to be one.
Right. You choose to go with the flow. You choose to, as Andre pointed out, just to be in that, you know, that line and live in that line of that narrative. And repeat, regurgitate, instead of doing your own homework and asking your own questions.
Well, but he when he brought up ego, it just hit something that you and I have discussed before. When we talk about people that follow a slogan or follow the group of people or follow the, you know, name calling. And we've talked about ignorance is bliss. And that's almost a perfect example. Ignorance is bliss. And when ego is also thrown into that mix, you have people that basically have no idea what's going on, but have a definitive opinion of judgment on other people and other groups that aren't based in any fact whatsoever.
Right.
And that's really, you think about it, how dangerous is that? When ignorance is bliss and ego goes with it, and ego is with that.
Right.
A huge ego's on top of it that I can't be wrong. Yet I'm completely wrong. I'm ignorant on all the issues out there, but I'm going to judge everybody based on my ignorance and my ego.
Yeah, you know, unlike that steak that Joey Pants was eating in The Matrix, sometimes your pride is hard to swallow.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm just flying through. There it is, right here.
What do you got?
Devin Nunes. MSNBC was all over this. They got the tape of Devin Nunes speaking candidly at a fundraiser saying, we got to win, otherwise the investigation stop.
Yeah, that's
the fundraiser. We
and
win.
That's a given.
We win, or it's done. We never find out what happens if we don't win in November. I wonder if that becomes a rallying cry for Republicans.
I think it is. I think along with right now, if you look at the Kavanaugh, the upcoming confirmation hearing, and I think, you know, unless the numbers change, but based on the headcount now, there's really no reason to believe that it's going to change with Kavanaugh unless we, I guess, learn something new about him. And that's possible. But if he is seated in early October, right, on the bench, on the highest court, then you get the possibility of another retirement, you know, in the next couple of years or whatever it might be. And I think there's this motivation, not that this isn't huge, but the motivation to for Republicans and conservatives to get out there and be very active, but something else. And that is, conservatives right now are screaming for the truth to come out about this investigation and how all of this went down. And reporters are on it. I mean, the latest that we've learned just this week from The Hill.
Right.
I mean, you fold all of this information, like I said before, the stuff that we actually know right now.
That nobody is disputing.
That nobody right. is disputing.
It's the evidence
exists. Documents
right.
attached to it. You put all that together, and it's not looking good for the Democrats, but it really, again, begs the question, what went on here? Well, that curiosity could be enough for those Republican voters to get out in November to make sure that this investigation continues.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley. In the news today, let's talk the odds, the betting odds. Checking here, odds checker gives Kamala Harris better odds than Bernie Sanders to win the Democratic primary and face Donald Trump in 2020.
Okay. All right. So
now both have identical 9-1 odds to win the presidential election. They're 9-1, trailing Trump, who was 11-8 odds to get reelected. But Harris has better odds to win the Democratic primary. Mm-hmm. Which means it doesn't matter. You don't go to the next one. It's like, well, your odds to win the Super Bowl are this, but your odds to win the AFC Championship are really low because you're facing New England.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
But odds checker gives Kamala Harris, mm-hmm. and you made a great point here when we were just laughing about this during the break, because this is even more meaningless than is there going to be a red wave, a blue wave, or a red ripple or a blue ripple.
Or a green party wave.
Or a green, party alien wave.
Yes, whose ancestors came here from other planets.
By the way, that guy was better than, remember the My Rent Is Too Damn High party candidate?
Yeah, right. Yeah, he is more entertaining.
Yeah, he really is.
Yeah, Manchik, Joe Manchik. In
yes.
Ohio, the Green Party candidate.
Harris, again, 9-2. And it would be interesting because you were saying, well, and I think it's a great point.
Mm-hmm.
And you're looking at it not as a partisan, but you were looking at it as a political consultant. We love to put on our political consultant ads.
Right.
And your point was?
Well, here's the aesthetics of all of this. Because I've said this before, like a Kamala Harris or a Cory Booker. They're activists, right?
Mm-hmm.
But as activists, you're going to have to be an activist on stage in a debate setting in your campaign against a Donald Trump. If you were to become the nominee in 2020, you are going to have to demonstrate your anger in order to motivate your base. And really, that's backfiring more than not here lately.
And
one way to go if you're that type of candidate, which they would be. So what would work for the Democrats is someone who can smile and has a smug smile on his face and laughs it off and is dismissive of Trump.
There's only one person who fits that category.
Joe Biden.
And again, I think, I don't know if you're going back to it, but as soon as you said that, during our top of the hour, I went back to his debate with Paul Ryan.
Yes.
Where everybody thought Paul Ryan was going to, I thought Paul Ryan was going to clean up on that debate, and he did not.
No, because what Joe does is, you know, he smiles those very oddly white teeth, and he looks at the crowd.
The chiclets.
Yeah, the chiclets, and he brings out the chiclets. It is it is a type of dismissive approach.
Right.
And he says things like, come on, man. Oh, Jack, you know it's not going to be that way. And,
is it me?
Yeah. Is it me? I mean, come on, look at this guy. I mean, that would be his approach. Is that your disarming? You would need someone that could disarm Trump, not challenge him, because if the point would be, first of all, Trump is a given. He's a known quantity now. 2016, the whirlwind that it was and all of the excitement and stories surrounding that, that's not going to be 2020. The way he speaks, the way he debates, it's not going to be new. So that's a given, right? That's a known. But you introduce someone new to that on this stage. It's not that they're new to politics, but in this setting, then there are individuals on the left that are going to have to be that have to be activists. I mean, you know, it's whether it's a Cory Booker, Kamala Harris, or any of them, they're going to have to be angry.
But that's
not going to work for them.
You make a great point. In order to win, we're looking down the road, but if you're in that debate with Trump, first off, the debates in the primaries, there is going to be a contest of who is more, these are the primary debates, the Democratic primary debates.
Right.
There's going to be a contest, and I don't know if any of them will be the winners, but right. There's going to be a contest with some of the, if you've got... I don't know, 10 candidates on stage. You're going to have five that are vying for the "we find Trump more disgusting than you do."
Yes.
Who hates Trump?
Who's angrier?
Who angrier? So yeah. You may use that in the primary, but when it comes to the general election debates, would you be able to do that, or will you come off as being unhinged and unstable when there's Trump, who's been through this already a bunch of times, and a little bit more experienced in the debates, where he still knows that he can get away with really sharp comments at you,
right?
But you coming back at him, and you can just see the fury and the anger that is what you have to keep in if you're a Democrat and wish to win a debate with him.
Because who's the dismissive one smiling in that setting? Trump.
It would be Trump, because even Hillary there was not this expected hate towards Trump that has become mainstream in the Democrat Party.
Yes.
Even with Hillary,
and that's what's different.
Right. And we weren't at that point yet. We're now at that point, and we will be. This is not going to go away before 2020. The hate will remain.
And because they're relying on it too. We've asked, what are they pointing? What are they promoting? Well, Bernie's promoting something that's DOA, Medicare for all. Look, we haven't solved Medicare for some, and that some being all the ones that have been paying in for years. So, what are they promoting? Nothing. The activists amongst them, and I put Elizabeth Warren in this category. They're going to have to be, if they're running, they're going to have to be angrier. And you hit the key point. It's always a contest. I'm more passionate than you. I'm loud. That's why they keep getting louder. I need to get some of that grease, and everybody else is the same squeaky wheel. I need to be squeakier. I need to be angrier and louder. I need to hate him more than you hate him.
Right.
And that has to be demonstrated time and time again. That's not going to work in a debate setting.
In the general election one-on-one.
Because
it may work in the primary.
Right.
For the Democrats.
Because
For not all the Democrats, but for one Democrat who a portion of the Democrat base believes, okay, you actually do hate him more than the other four hate him.
Because there are two things. As you mentioned, they either come off as unhinged, we're just talking about the perception here,
right,
or they come off as fake, and fake anger is the worst. Because it doesn't work for your side, and it also doesn't work for the middle. Keep in mind, in that setting, in the presidential election, you're trying to convince people who are on the fence. I mean, that's where the elections are won. But if you start to alienate some of your own base, then you could blow it for the entire run. And I just wonder where they will go. The reason Joe Biden gets numbers right now is because he's seen as that milquetoast. They don't, many of those rank and file Democrats, they don't want the activists in the White House.
I think there was an article written about the 10 districts in California. I forgot, I think it was maybe the Free Beacon who had it.
Mm.
10 districts in California, Democrats running, all of them saying, no, we're not going to get rid of ICE.
Right,
they can't.
Right.
And that is, you know, we've talked about what's going to happen in the midterm and all the analysis that we saw yesterday, which is like, you don't have any idea. Nobody
right.
really knows.
Right.
I'm reading here the red wave illusion. The blue wave may be receding. It may be, a toss up. Well, yeah, because we live sort of in a 50-50 nation. By the way, breaking news: Eric and Gary will announce exactly whether it will be a red wave or a blue wave or somewhere in the middle at 12:06 a.m. On November 7th.
Yes, we will.
Well, because you don't, because again, nobody really knows. But when you look at, as we said earlier with polling, we have through our research in polls and have seen that polls get more accurate as you get closer to the election, because at that point, then it becomes much more real for people.
Right.
We have pointed out the polls that were actually really close. I know that many people are under the illusion that none of the polls were close because Trump won. Actually, there were three or four polls that were very close on the population vote.
Yeah, right.
They missed the Electoral College vote, the 300,000 to 400,000, but they were very close when it comes to the percentage of people that would vote either for Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. But they became much more accurate as you got closer, and really the closest polls are a day or two before. I mean, almost probably 90% of the time, that's what you see. And it's because it becomes more real. So what people are talking about right now, they don't know. I think you brought up one of the greatest points. What will be the momentum because of the Kavanaugh hearings?
Well, because,
I didn't even think about that until you brought it up, and I went, that's a great point. That's going to happen in September, early October, and that could be a huge motivator and a huge rallying cry for Trump and the Republicans saying, number one, if you want to keep the investigation going as to, you know, what the Democrats did to try to screw up 2016, you know, reverse it on them. And by that time, with all the information we're getting here in the last couple of days about, you know, Bruce Orr and the FBI actually using Christopher Steele after the election.
Right.
The FBI breaking
into 2017.
The FBI breaking their own rules. Bruce Orr well into 2017. The Department of Justice still using Christopher Steele for information. Where was his information coming from? The Russians. So even after the election, apparently Christopher Steele, they were trying to tap in for information that came from the Russians.
Right.
In order to destroy the Trump presidency well into 2017. So who knows what is going to be there? The combination of Kavanaugh and that at that time, will that be a rallying cry for Democrats? How well will, I know it will bring out the Democrats, the hate Donald Trump no matter what.
No
hate,
doubt.
Hate the fascist.
Yeah.
He's a Nazi. He's a fascist.
Yeah.
That will all come out again in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And that will help energize the Democrat base. I don't know how much it will energize the base. It may in the one district for the primary. If it's true at all that the number of millennials that are motivated to vote, and again, that can change between now and November, but if it's down into, you know, the 1 in 4 territory or even less by that time,
right,
Democrats are in trouble.
Well, and that's what it comes down to, is that where are those great motivators? And we know there's a number of them. Of course, hatred for the current president, that's going to be there. There are givens there. I do believe that Nunes is right. I believe it is. Look, we've got to be able to maintain control here. Otherwise, this whole thing, we may never learn the truth about how this whole thing went on and or went down. And that's extremely important. Again, we say that not knowing how this is going to fall out. And then I think the Kavanaugh hearing, the confirmation hearings, as they go through September, and Grassley announcing it, I thought about this yesterday. You know, when Grassley announced that the confirmation hearings probably wouldn't be until September, and that they may not get him seated if he's confirmed until early October, which would be maybe a day or two late into the new session by the fall session for the Supreme Court. You look at that and how that plays out. All of the news surrounding that into October, if that is a strategy, whether it is or not, it's still important and it's still a motivator. Because when you look at the makeup of the high court, where is it that the real long-lasting change comes about?
Right.
Congress can go in and change laws. Executive orders can be changed by the next president. But that lasting change comes at the highest level, and that balance on the courts for conservatives, this unique opportunity, could be here again before Trump is done, but he needs the Senate to do it. That, I think, is a great consideration.
And on general issues, it's the economy and, number one, immigration. Still is the
yes.
number one issue.
Right.
So that's what
and
we're going
American
into.
And the American people are with the Republicans and the president on
right,
that.
With the Republicans on that. And you've got now Democrats, the one column in the Examiner, bailing on the whole concept of getting rid of ICE
right.
that they've had the last month. So what strong issue do they have?
Right.
So, again, that's why I look at this and view it as a toss-up, and I don't know. I've said this in 2016 at times. I don't know where the American electorate is at times, and right now, in August of 2018, I'm not sure where those in the middle, those independents in the middle, I don't know where they actually are. Which way will they actually move that, as we know, changes the outcome of every election?
The president owns right now the economy. He owns immigration, illegal immigration, and the Democrats own nothing but hate.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Corn and soybean crops are, for the most part,
racing along and are going to be mature well ahead of schedule.
2 weeks ahead, maybe more, and USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says that raises a question.
What will happen to crops like corn and soybeans when you actually have an abbreviated growing season?
In other words, how are crop yields affected, if at all, by the shorter time between planting and maturity?
That gives a little bit less time for accumulation of mass in corn and soybeans. And it does make you wonder if we're going to lose a little bit of yield potential because of that accelerated development. We're somewhat uncharted territory this year because of the warmth and the wetness in the majority of the production areas for corn and soybeans. And it remains to be seen, I think, just what the outcome will be.
There's one thing fairly certain, though. Farmers will not have to worry about crops being damaged by an early freeze. Most crops will be done before that becomes a possibility. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Gary McNamara, along with Eric Harley. It will be interesting. Rudy Giuliani yesterday on Fox News saying this case isn't going to fizzle. It's going to blow up on them. There's a lot more to what they did that nobody knows about yet. And it goes all back to the emails that have been discovered from Bruce Ohr to Christopher Steele. And the fact that the FBI has admitted, even though they said, at November 1st, 2016, no more dealing with Christopher Steele. That's the rule. He is not to be used for anything intelligence-wise
right.
or anything.
Yeah.
And the FBI continued to have a backdoor through the Department of Justice and Bruce Ohr to Christopher Steele, who was getting his information from the Russians even after the election and well into the Trump administration.
for Omnitrax. Here's your forecast.
There's a couple of different factors that can cause rain to persist over an area for several days. In this case, it's a stationary front located from north-central Texas into southern Oklahoma and central Arkansas. That's where we'll see the heaviest of rain showers today around the country. From the Dallas-Fort Worth area through Oklahoma City, then over to Little Rock on I-40, the Texarkana area set to potentially even see some flash flooding today. As we look for relief from Mother Nature in the West, I'm looking at long-range models on the GFS, and I don't see any rain for California for at least a week. Seattle, Washington will be sunny today, high 89. Los Angeles, clear, 93. Dallas, thunderstorms, 93. Kansas City, sunny and 94. Rain chances look better for Chicago tomorrow. Today, mostly cloudy and 86. Rain will be pushing into the mid-Atlantic and northeast today, part of that stationary front that I mentioned in the south. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio, I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
To have the conversation, Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Well, Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey on Wednesday signaled a coming change to his company's speech policies following pressure from his own employees. Some Twitter employees are unhappy, this from the Daily Caller, that Twitter has yet to join Facebook, Spotify, Apple, and YouTube in banning right-wing conspiracy theorist Alex Jones. By the way, you could not be doing Alex Jones a bigger favor.
Right. Yeah, that's more publicity for
him. You couldn't be doing him a bigger favor.
He becomes the martyr.
See? There is a conspiracy against me.
I told you.
I told you. So. I just want to make sure I got that out. All right.
See what I was saying?
Like, thank you so much. See, they're all conspiring against me. I told you they were.
Yeah.
Twitter is planning to accelerate a crackdown on hate speech and is looking to evaluate whether to punish users for off-platform behavior. According to a company-wide email sent on Wednesday, when will this get to the point? When does it get to the point where they're going to ban the president? Talking Twitter now.
Mm. Yeah, right.
Well, all right, we're going to change.
Go ahead.
I mean, that's got to be the next thing,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah, go
because
ahead.
It'll be Alex Jones, and then it will be, well, what do, about the president?
Do that before 2020, please.
Oh, could you do that November 1st?
Exactly.
Of this year. Right before the midterms.
Yeah.
But I'm being serious. If you start with Alex Jones and then it goes to what? And we have talked about this before. We had talked about this earlier from the LGBT group that was extremely upset that the study that was taken, and they viewed it as transphobic and hate speech, hate, when a survey found out that the majority of people, gay or straight, won't date a transgender. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you believe that is hate.
Yeah.
Not personal preference, as we said, well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
How come you get to get what you want, but I don't get to get what I want? Don't I get to date who I wish to date? If you're going to wish to date who you wish to date, why are you saying since somebody won't date you that they're hateful? They just don't wish to date you. That's their preference.
Why are you being such a heterophobe?
Right. Exactly. But that's how absurd it's getting, though.
Yes, because you have a preference that doesn't include me or anyone in my group. That makes you someone who is filled with hate.
With hate. And that comes across. And I can see you, if you said that on Twitter, that would be viewed as hate speech. Because remember, the definition of what is hate, there is no definition. That's why the other guy, I know I shocked him the other day when he said there's no such thing as hate speech. And I said, I hate you. And he said, what? I said, no, I'm just trying to make a point. Right. People can identify and give their opinion of what hate speech is. What is it legally? And what is it politically? That's even more important.
Right.
Forget about what it is legally. What is it politically? And what is it? How is it viewed in the free market? And as we have said, the what we see, and it's going to happen. I really believe it. I'll say this. I will be happy to be wrong on this. But I see that the social media will slowly look, they're not going to tell, what's her name, Sarah Jeong, that she can't be, she'll be able to put all of her racist tweets on because it's okay to be a liberal racist. Because that's justified.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to justify what forms of racism they all comes from a conservative in this way, and it's not really racist, but we view it as intolerant and therefore hateful, and so you're off. That's what it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
We all know where it's going because it's gone there already. The New York Times in the last week has shown you exactly where the path is. Liberal racism is okay.
Yes. It's okay. We can do that.
You can't get more mainstream liberal than the New York Times, can you?
No.
Is there anything more mainstream than the New York Times? Hey, our racist is okay.
Well, I mean, Facebook. Louis Farrakhan.
Yeah.
Oh, no, he doesn't violate our... Really? So his anti-Semitic conspiracy theories, that's okay. That doesn't apply. Look, that's their, they can do whatever they want to. New York Times can keep Jeong employed and try and justify it. And Facebook can say, oh, no, it applies over here and doesn't apply over there. They own it. They own the real estate. So they get to do that. And then we get to judge accordingly. And we get to participate accordingly. So that's where they are. They try and justify their hate, their grab for power as something more noble. Always.
By the way, I want to address this because when we were talking last hour and analyzed what's going to happen in 2020, when I say that the Democrats, when we say the Democrats have hate, we're not saying that out of spite or anything from the Democrats. I'm being legit. As if I'm looking at this as a political consultant.
Mm-hmm.
When we said, look, the Democrats, the major thing that they have is their hate for Trump. It's true. Mm-hmm. The Democrats are not issue-based right now. The only issue they've had in the last, really, the month that they have, until climate change the last couple of days has come up as a huge issue for the Democrats. But for the last month, it's been about getting rid of ICE.
Yeah.
But they really don't have issues. That's our point. The Democrats really aren't solidly behind these issues where they're uniting. Yeah, the same old free college, but they're always here, free college. Medicare for all. Well, yeah, that's something that's always thrown out. Those are long items. We were hearing free college back in Occupy Wall Street. In fact, that's what we believe. The only thing that ever came out of Occupy Wall Street was, okay, the banks should forgive all the debt.
Right.
And we should have free college.
You shouldn't have to pay for it.
But other than that, there really are no issues. When I say that the Democrats, what is driving them is the hatred of Donald Trump, I'm not doing that because in order to insult the Democrats, that's actually reality. That's mm-hmm. that's where they stand right now.
Yeah.
And it may not be all, but it's what you see. It's what's driving the narrative on social media. Go on social media, you'll see it.
Yep,
he's a Nazi. Look at the protest at the White House right now.
Mm-hmm.
The Russian annex. He's treasonous. There's no proof of any of this. There's not even a specific allegation. So if you don't have a specific allegation, We brought you the one screenwriter who his name now just popped out of my mind. The one from American Psycho, who we related a paragraph of his from Rolling Stone magazine.
Right.
And he stated, he said, you know, that and he's around liberals all the time. And he just said liberals have gone off the deep end. You know, and he was talking about, you know, relatives of his who were Polish and murdered in World War II in concentration camps.
Right.
He goes, you got Rachel Maddow on there crying as if detention centers in the United States for illegal immigrants that have to be there somehow are somehow related to my family being wiped out by Hitler's Germany. He goes, it's bizarre. And that's the point that we're bringing up, that I think many people who aren't consumed with the hate for the president can see so clearly that you're being driven by hate. And so that we're not trying to in any way, if you're a Democrat, this isn't about an insult. That is actually political analysis.
Right.
And you had mentioned during that when we were in the discussion that with Obama, it was things like Obamacare.
Well, because if you look at the midterm of 2010, the big red wave, the Republicans gaining power. It was on what? It was on his actions. Not things that they wanted you to believe were true. No, he, and we believe it was unconstitutional, even though the Supreme Court decided otherwise. Thank you, Chief Justice John Roberts. That Obamacare was about what? The government forcing you to buy something,
right,
simply because you exist, forcing you to buy health care and controlling the rules, changing the rules, and then lying about it. That was a problem with many of us. And that's why the Republicans won. And then on top of that, he was the big money grab. He wanted to tax people a great deal more. At some point, I believe you've made enough money. It was the things he was doing.
And by that time, we started to realize that we forget about the stimulus package.
Mm-hmm.
The $1 trillion that was spent. Oh, okay. Apparently, there weren't really shovel-ready jobs out there. Oh, the green jobs, they weren't really there either.
Right.
And we started realizing that it was, you know, Republicans, that it was BS. Now, they passionately disliked him because of it.
Right. But it was based on his actions as president.
Right. It wasn't fascist, Nazi.
So ask yourself.
Treasonous as to that level. You'll always have a minor level in any party.
Sure.
Throwing that out or one side.
Yeah.
But it wasn't all consuming, not close to it as it is right now.
The threats of the things that he promised to do. This made up narrative about the current president. Let's get down to the facts. So far, what is it that doesn't resonate with the American people? Illegal immigration, border control. That resonates with the American people. Lowering taxes. Their own bank accounts are resonating with the American people. The economy, where it stands right now, at least, resonating with the American people. There are a couple of things that us conservatives might have a concern with on the president, but it doesn't mean we're going to stray and vote for Nancy Pelosi's side. It means that we're going to call the president out on it and hope that he changes his mind and that he changes his course of action on tariffs. But aside from that, where's the one big issue where it's affected people negatively?
Where the Democrats are furious with it. Now, I guess you could say the Supreme Court justices, but I don't even see that resonating with the rank and file Democrats. It may be inside, you know, inside the Beltway and in Congress, but even that has died down recently.
It really has. I mean, it didn't gain traction with Gorsuch. It really hasn't gained traction with Kavanaugh. And certainly there would be a concern about the shift on the Supreme Court. But I think people look at that and say, okay, what is the real threat? Because with Kavanaugh, it became all about what? Roe v. Wade. It became about abortion again. And is that threat real? That's what this is about. You know, you brought something up earlier about, okay, these polls, do they really mean anything right now? But when you look at the issues, the threats, the false narratives, are they really resonating with the voters? That's the question on the left. Now, the hatred, definitely, it's going to motivate a number of people. But again, gets back to the question, to what extent?
866-90-RUD-EYE.
What's the difference between standard number 2 diesel and premium fuel? Ron Jessen is director of product management for Cenex, the makers of Cenex Roadmaster XL premium diesel fuel, and he fills us in.
You may want to consider the total operational cost behind the price of the pump. If you look at the cost for replacement and you look at the cost of ongoing maintenance, unfortunately, those costs haven't gone down. They've actually continued to increase. But switching to a premium diesel fuel can really result in some large operational savings with the fuel economy and reducing the equipment repair costs. Our fleet owners, if you want to consider trying a premium diesel fuel in the past, or if you have considered it in the past, now is really the time to take advantage of that with the lower diesel fuel prices to try out that premium diesel fuel.
There are more than 1,450 Cenex locations in 19 states across the Midwest and Pacific Northwest. Visit Cenex.com to find a Cenex location and learn more. This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Radio. He is Eric Cronin. I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. You know, there's 12 NFL games tonight. So if nobody kneels, it might mean that we were right. That it's a don't ask, don't tell policy.
Yep, that the Players Association basically sent the message quietly. Hey, let's make this thing go away.
And we're going to say,
go do things off the field.
We're going to save face like the Philadelphia Players said the other day. Well, we can protest in better ways
in
now.
In bigger ways.
We bypassed this and gone on.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yep.
We'll see.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.